City Current. Produced by Dakota Media Access. In-depth discussion with Bismarck and Mandan city officials. Watch on Government Access Channel 602 HD or tune in to Radio Access 102.5 FM. Always local, always current.
Welcome to a Bismarck edition of City Current. I'm Mary Van Sickle, and we're here in the studios at Dakota Media Access. And today we have a special, it's a special edition, and it's a special, we have a special guest as well. Jason Timonic is here as always from the city of Bismarck, and also joining us today is Ben Arith, Community Development Director for Bismarck.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. Long-time listener, first-time participant. So, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in. I say a historic event for us today. This is the 100th
100.
Yeah.
That congratulations.
We've done. Yeah, hey, congratulations.
100 for you.
You've been here for half of them.
That's right.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. It's been very interesting. We didn't know when we started it would continue this long, but it seems to be working.
We're dedicated.
So, yes, we are. So congratulations to all of us for 100 programs, and certainly our staff works really hard on this because there's a lot of people involved in
there
this
are.
Program. So So we had a city commission meeting last night. It was pretty brief, because city commission meetings
go 1 hour and 1 minute.
Yeah, yeah. Not a lot of content there. There was not a lot for us to talk about, because there were a lot of consent agenda items, absolutely.
We were pretty heavy on consent, just a couple regular agenda items.
Yeah, so. But I do want to mention that the commission did convene as the Board of Health before they convened as this city commission. And that means that Renee Mock, the Director of Public Health, gave a report.
Right.
And typically, pretty much like on a quarterly basis, Renee will come in and give that report.
That's right. And then they try and focus on emerging topics or current trends that are going on in the world of public health. Last night, they had three kind of main focus areas.
Right.
Talking about, of course, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. There was a report from Sue Kaler, the tobacco prevention specialist, on vaping. And then also some information on homelessness and some of the things. And I guess influenza and vaccines was part of it last night as well.
So, again, timely subjects. And their big project that Renee has kind of took hold of is the homeless issue in
the
community and kind of
the 10-year plan to end homelessness.
Yes.
Yes.
And I should mention, too, that we've been meeting with Renee lately, too, and we will be able to take those reports and provide a little more detail. We're planning on that and recording those programs very soon with Renee, and we'll hopefully be doing that on an ongoing basis, like we do for the commission meetings that you and I meet
on. Yeah, so. I think that's fantastic. There's a whole variety of topics that public health can cover, and there's always new things that are emerging.
Absolutely.
So I think that's a great idea. Kudos to you and kudos to the staff at Public Health for their willingness to share their information.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. Again, no lack of content or issues to talk about. So hopefully we can help get that information out with them. So
looking forward to it.
Yeah. So before we even talk about the commission meeting tonight, we want to talk about Ben's department and community development and some of the projects that you're working on. Because we have time today.
All right, great.
And one of the issues or one of the areas that you're working on is revising the parking code for the city of Bismarck. Why are we doing this?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Mary. So I think the current parking code was the last major revision we've seen was in the 1980s. There have been incremental adjustments to it since that point. But a couple of reasons. One, I think we've been hearing some comments from the business community that perhaps a change is worth considering. But two, we issue through the Board of Adjustment what we call variances, and those are basically modifications to provisions we have in our zoning and subdivision regulations. And so our staff has done a good job in sort of tracking what types of variances have been requested over the past 5 years, and parking or reductions in required parking, off-street parking are one of those areas that are commonly most commonly requested.
The most frequent request.
Correct.
And I think we have a map that indicates that you provided to us that indicates some of those requests over the past.
Yeah, we've had about 30 or 40 variance requests over the past 5 years. A lot of the requests are focused kind of in the established part of the community. But yeah, there it is. Thanks for bringing that up. As you can see, they're sort of concentrated in the central part of the community.
So what do you think the outcome might be, Ben, as you start looking at this code? Do you see some revisions in particular areas or time limits on parking? What might be the outcome here?
Yeah, so right now we're working with a stakeholder group that includes both Commissioner Oban and Mayor Bakken, as well as a number of folks from the business world, from the consulting engineering world, basically that may have interest in parking in our community. Some of the concerns that have been raised through that effort, we've had a couple meetings with that group, and some of the concerns that have been raised through that effort are related to maybe letting the market have more of a say in how much parking is provided, and so balancing that market-driven demand with, of course, the reason we have parking regulations to begin with are to try to mitigate that spillover into adjacent properties and adjacent neighborhoods. So trying to address that balance.
Well, and as you said, it's been since almost the mid-80s since any attention has been paid to this in this parking code. Trying to anticipate what's coming in the future is difficult. Mm-hmm. But you already see a kind of some changes, certainly in the world of retail.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what's happening and the transportation issues all tie into this.
Food service industry is changing.
Absolutely.
We've heard from some of the franchise restaurants with drive-thrus that a good percentage of their meals are going out the drive-thru window rather than guests coming into the restaurant.
Yeah.
So it's an appropriate time to adapt to what's going on, but we've seen it in parking lots. There's now spots reserved for online shopping, for pickup orders.
Right.
So you're in and out in a brief amount of time for
it's
retailers.
A rapidly changing area, so I can see where the big challenge would be is to try and get a handle on all that.
Yeah, and some of the other areas that have been brought up through our conversations with the stakeholder group have kind of revolved around maybe rethinking mixed-use developments, so in buildings that may have multi-tenants that have different uses, not requiring specific off-street parking for each one of those individual uses, but maybe looking at that total structure, that total development, and perhaps looking at reductions there. I think there's been just a kind of a consensus of maybe just a general blanket parking reduction for all uses in the community with this stakeholder group at least. And then also maybe exploring, so in our downtown area, we have a parking district where we don't require off-street parking in that area, and potentially looking at porting that out to different neighborhoods or different parts of the community that may make sense.
Sure.
So.
Sure, absolutely. And I would assume that this is all going to be coming back to the commission before
it's finalized. Yeah, it would require a public hearing at both the Planning and Zoning Commission and the City Commission. I think ultimately our goal is to try to have something to present probably sometime in early 2020.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Maybe one thing we'll worth mentioning that the parking is more for off-street parking, so surface lots. Mm-hmm. And we might want to think about land consumption as well. If some of those parking requirements are reduced, there's more opportunity for better or more efficient use of land. You've seen some of those outlots around Kirkwood Mall with new businesses on them. That's a result of a minor adjustment to the parking requirements for the mall. If you can think back to some of those times before those buildings were there, a lot of that parking sat empty for the better part of the year, and in the winter it became an area for snow storage.
Holiday season, it picked up.
Right, a couple of shopping events throughout the year, but primarily those were underutilized opportunities. Right. So we've seen that minor adjustments can spur infill and redevelopment opportunities, too.
Jason, that prompted me, too, to think, thanks for that comment, because that prompted me, to think about some of the other benefits in the community. So you mentioned Kirkwood Mall. In a typical suburban setting, commercial development, parking often consumes about 50% of the total land for that development. So it's a big, it's a significant portion of that development. And you can start to think of how that might impact things like stormwater runoff and
land
impacts
costs
to the environment, land costs, just the
maintenance and
the
repair,
expansion of our community due to parking. If you start looking at development and versus with development, you know, each one of those things increase the outward expansion, which has an impact on
really
the services
up,
that we provide.
Opened up some opportunity in that Kirkwood lot
for
new stuff.
And then with affordable housing, too, oftentimes Parking is a barrier to constructing more affordable forms of housing. So I think there's not only benefit potentially for the business community, but also the community at large when we look at this.
So we'll be talking about it again as it comes back to the
commission. Yeah, this will be a long discussion. Yeah, there will be many steps to this one as it goes forward.
Another project that has, we've seen some steps already with the commission and earlier this year, I believe, is this minimum
Habitability.
Habitability.
Yeah. Say that's five times fast.
It's a hard word to say. Standards, the standards that your department is looking at putting together so that, property owners, manufactured housing, apartment houses have some standards that are in place that can be enforced.
Right. And thanks for the question, Mary. I think these are focused on rental housing options. And really, it's kind of been our city attorney's office. Janelle Combs has been working closely with Brady Blaskowski, our building official, in trying to draft some of these ordinances. But up until about 2004, we were operating under what was called the Uniform Building Code, and transitioned to what we call the International Building Code. And communities all across the country, the state of North Dakota, adopt these codes for building and development. Mm-hmm. And through that transition in 2004, there were some minimum standards we had in place prior to 2004. And after that transition, some of those standards, I think, were inadvertently omitted in that transition. And so really, this is looking at trying to provide what most of us might consider basic elements of a dwelling unit, such as running water, hot water, heat in the home, functional windows, weatherproofing of the structure, limiting pest infestation and those types of things. Really, it was the purpose for this really, I think, came from a few different directions. A couple years ago, we did a plan called the Infill and Redevelopment Plan, which really focused on trying to identify opportunities to make it possibly policy changes to make it easier to develop in the established part of the community. But as part of that process, it was identified that some form of minimum rental housing standards should be considered and looked at. And then also, I think just generally anecdotally, our department, as well as others, Jason can probably testify to this too, over the years we've received concerns, complaints, questions from tenants that are living in situations that are rather difficult, that they don't have some of these basic needs that are being met. And so
there wasn't a lot you could do at that point.
Since 2004, there's not been a lot we can do. And so this is trying to address some of those basic needs.
So it gives some teeth to the standards so that you can enforce some of the rules.
Yeah, it would allow our staff to be able to enforce that particular piece of it. I would say there is a provision in what we're proposing that would, basically require communication between tenant and landlord to make sure they're talking to each other as a first step, right?
Absolutely.
And then we would get involved if there's not resolved some of these basic issues.
So this is another issue that's coming back to the commission at some point when these standards are developed. Some public meetings will happen. Will it go to planning and zoning first?
Or this would not need to go to planning and zoning commission. This would be to our building code in what we call our Title IV. So that's not required to go to planning and zoning, but there would be a public hearing ultimately at the city commission. I think we're hopeful by the end of the year we can have something available for the commission to consider.
So we'll be talking about it again.
Yeah, and there's lots of work between Ben's office, the stakeholder groups that are involved. It isn't just a bunch of city people making rules here. There's obviously a lot of learning that needs to go on between, what we feel is appropriate and what they're willing to work with us on as well. So this has been a kind of a longer project, but it is something that has emerged as a need. So we're definitely taking a look at it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll again be talking about it as it comes back to the commission.
Certainly.
Another area that your department works on is the Metropolitan Planning Organization, or you're part of that Metropolitan Planning Organization. You also have that staff within your community development department. department.
That's right.
The MPO serves the city of Bismarck, Mandan, Lincoln, and then Burley and Morton counties. We actually televise all their meetings as well. So kind of aware of what they're working on. A lot of transportation issues on studies that they're doing. But we have the Arrive 2045 project coming forward. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Rachel Drulo with the MPO is really facilitating that process, but it's about every 5 years, well, required to do it actually every 5 years, is develop a long-range transportation plan for the community. And what that allows from a financial perspective, it allows federal resources, transportation resources, to come into the Bismarck-Mandan area. Our area generally receives about $5 million every year in federal resources.
And I think that's an important point. You're not doing this just for the fun of it. You have to have these plans in place to access federal funds and state funds as well.
Well, we think it's fun too, but and the other important point is really to try to get a handle on where might we be going, you know, in terms of development from a land use and transportation perspective. These are oftentimes multi-million dollar projects that we need to work together on as jurisdictions, and that's really part of why the MPOs exist in this country, is because transportation projects extend beyond jurisdictional boundaries.
We just previously talked about that issue and the impact it has on off-street parking. That plays a role in this as well. We should mention too, and we have if you could pop up my website here, I'm just talking about that a little bit, arrive2045.com. You can go there and get a lot of information. So you can see what's happened so far. There's a timeline on here. You can get documents and look at videos and you see their schedule of, you know, the timeline that's been put in place. So it looks like January of 2020. We should have a presentation of almost a final project.
The MPO in particular does a really nice job of trying to find as many ways as possible to involve the public. You know, that's often a challenge with some of these plans, and oftentimes they have their own standalone website. We're hopeful that a draft will be available in January or February, and then that there will be probably a series of public input opportunities to react to that draft of what the future of transportation might look like in the Bismarck-Mandan area.
And it's a big geographic area. Draw a big circle around Bismarck-Mandan, Burley, and Morton County.
Yeah, I think it's about 350 square miles that they plan for.
Yeah.
So
our team
plans
for. So you can go on the website
for.
And get more information, but those public meetings will be announced and people should participate, because there's a lot of roads that you're talking about in here.
So. Right. Yeah. We welcome public engagement. So
any and all feedback is always great. Sometimes these studies that are so important and so comprehensive go with very little public feedback. So anytime we can engage with the public and get some meaningful input, it's always appreciated.
Yeah. I'm going to jump to the commission agenda from last night.
And you bet.
One of the two regular agenda items that were last night was the sign code. And we've seen a discussion of sign code at previous commission meetings, as well as planning and zoning. So where are we at with that process right now?
Yes. So Daniel Nairn in our office and along with Brady Blaskowski, our building official, have been working on basically developing a sign code. Bismarck doesn't have a comprehensive sign code. So back in I think November, December, Daniel and Brady kind of embarked on this journey, and it's a challenge. Developing sign codes in any community is oftentimes challenging, but we've been meeting basically with a variety of stakeholders in the community, primarily made up of folks from the sign industry, but also there's representatives from the Bismarck-Mandan Chamber EDC on that group as well. So I mentioned it's Bismarck's first comprehensive sign code. Right now, signage is regulated in different parts of our zoning and subdivision regulations, as well as the building code, and it's not all in one sort of neat area or package. And so that's one of the big goals is just to consolidate all of the different regulations into one location.
In one place.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
More user friendly.
Yeah, and then it also, some of the the more noteworthy issues that it's addressing. It's addressing some of the signs that are currently unregulated. Portable signs are one of those
that seems
types
to be
getting of signage.
A lot of attention. Right?
I would say that's probably getting probably the most attention on the sign code piece of it, and it's one of the bigger issues is related to the duration period that's proposed. So presently, as I mentioned, with portable signs, and I know Mary has an image here at some point that'll probably come up, but portable signs are basically temporary in nature. You see them there. You see it on the screen right now. We all see these around the community. Mm-hmm. But right now we really don't have any regulations, so we don't know how many are out in the community. We don't know what type of condition they're in. We don't know where they're located. So right now we've proposed some basic regulation associated with these things, such as permitting these types of signs, so we know where they're at. Currently we're proposing a duration period of 240 days in a calendar year to cite these. What's also proposed is to separate portable signs by distance on a single parcel. So you might be able to have, depending on how big the parcel you own is, you might be able to have multiple portable signs, but we're proposing right now a 100-foot spacing between those.
I thought it was interesting in your notes, and mm-hmm. I think you even mentioned mm-hmm. last night that mm-hmm. there was regulations. Mm-hmm. There were previously mm-hmm. regulations on portable signs, mm-hmm. but this is one of those issues that when you flip to the International right. Building Code, it inadvertently got dropped off the regulations.
Yeah, this is another one of those areas that maybe fell through the cracks, excuse me, in that transition. But you're right, Mary, up until about 2012, what's called the uniform sign code really regulated particularly portable signage in Bismarck. And at that point, I think signage was limited to a total of 60 days. We assume that although uniform sign code didn't say this, we assume that's in a calendar year, mm-hmm. but it was not specific there. And I think it limited the overall area to something like 24 feet. So it was, I would say, significantly more restrictive previously than what is currently proposed. But in that roughly 7-year gap since that point, the signs have virtually gone unregulated at this point.
So you're in the process, your department's in the process mm-hmm. of taking inventory of the portable mm-hmm. signs that are in the community right now.
Yeah, and I think our team is out there today even driving around the community trying to identify the locations. Mm-hmm. That's really the best method we have at this point, since we don't know where these yeah. exist other than driving around the community. So we're logging those locations and the number of those signs that are presently out there.
Yeah. So this is going to come back to the commission again.
It will, yeah.
Last night was mm-hmm. a report basically on the status mm-hmm. of what's...
Yeah, and I should note there's more to the sign code than just the portable sign piece, as you said, Mary. That seems to be the part that's drawing the most attention, just because there's not a clear consensus that can be reached from folks in the signage industry and city staff here in this case. But there's other elements to it as well. A couple of the other noteworthy pieces of the sign code that are changing would be heights for permanent signage. So right now, permanent signage currently is regulated by the total height allowed in that zoning district. Mm-hmm. So in commercial zoning districts, for example, you could have a sign in excess of 100 feet tall. Mm. So right now we're proposing in those districts to limit the height to 50 feet at a maximum in those commercial areas, allowing for through the what we call a special use permit exceptions up to 80 feet if it's within a certain distance of the interstate and the sign faces the interstate. But so that's an issue that's also being addressed. And then something that's I think creating more opportunity for businesses is creating or not businesses necessarily, but the schools in the community. We've been getting requests for what we call electronic message centers. So these are signs you often see in front of banks or other type similar uses, and you see information about their business scrolling across that digital screen. And schools have been requesting this so they don't have to go out and physically change copy on their permanent signs, that they can program a message and just change copy from inside. Right now, schools that are located in residential areas, they're prohibited from having an electronic message center, and this would allow them to have one.
This seems somewhat complicated or complex, as most big issues are, I guess, about content and the digital signage and where it sits and what it displays. Now, one thing that you did mention as well in your comments was that you won't have any jurisdiction over the content of the sign itself. So this is content neutral. You don't suggest that you're going to dictate or control what the messages are. Yours is just from a placement and public safety perspective, primarily.
Yeah, that's correct, Mary. Planners often refer to this as time, place, manner. Those are the things we can regulate with signage. There was a few different reasons why we are pursuing this sign code update. And one of those is related to the content neutrality piece that you brought up. There was a recent Supreme Court ruling titled Reed versus City of Gilbert, Arizona, where the community was challenged because they were essentially regulating a specific type of sign, which would mean they're regulating the content of that type of sign. And the Supreme Court basically indicated that you can't regulate content, and so we're having to update our current regulation on signage to ensure that we're consistent with that Supreme Court ruling. So that's another one of those areas why we have opted to pursue this.
Well, it'll be interesting to see and get to the recommendations, the outcome of this revision. It's interesting and good to see that the height issues are being addressed, as many as other things. But you see this proliferation of activity up on State Street and the continuation of that commercial district growing north. It would be nice to have a little more control as the community expands in that area, because it's previous to that, or is south of that area. I mean, there's a little chaotic display of signs at all different heights, and it's
a lot of businesses trying to get your attention.
Absolutely.
As you're driving down a very busy corridor at speeds in excess of 40 miles an hour.
So that's a great point. So another one of the benefits why communities regulate signage is to try to mitigate that. The term I think we've been using is that arms race of signage, so you don't have to get the bigger, brighter, bolder signage to attract or block someone else's sign, and so you can keep some sort of legibility of other businesses in the community. So it's sort of protect other signs in the community that people have made an investment in.
Yeah, so I can see that, and certainly there's a public safety perspective on this well. With distractions and more distractions along a busy roadway, that can be a problem.
Yeah, it can be. I don't know if there's any scientific evidence that we've come across related to the distracted driving piece. What you will hear from the sign industry is that you know, the purpose of that sign is to draw your attention to that sign and that business. So you know, maybe there's not scientific evidence, but if the intent is to take your eye off the road onto that sign, I think some of us feel comfortable saying there's some form of distraction occurring there.
Yeah, so absolutely. Well, more to come on that one as well.
Yeah.
Your department, it sounds like it's been pretty darn busy in the last few months, or you've been on board since when?
Since March, actually.
Oh, man.
So
a lot
and
going on.
I'm just tremendously blessed and happy to have a great team to get all this stuff done.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you're busy with a lot of other things. We talked earlier, we only have a little bit of time left, but you have a building inspections educational efforts that are ongoing. You said you have a workshop for building framers coming up very soon.
Yeah. So Brady Blaskowski, our building official, will be, this is a first, I think, for us. We'll be kind of facilitating or hosting a discussion with folks in the framing community. But also, there will be other participants, other building officials from City of Mandan, Burley County, Morton County, that will be participating. I think it's an opportunity to talk with the framers in town and to try to have an open dialogue, really, on some of the common things that we've been seeing in terms of when we inspect homes and some of those issues that we've been observing, but also an opportunity for the framing community to really tell us some of the struggles and challenges they may be having as well. So,
yeah. Sounds like a great effort amongst mm-hmm. many things that mm-hmm. your department is doing. Mm-hmm. So, congratulations.
Oh,
lots of activity
yeah.
happening here, yeah. so stay yeah. tuned, because I know they'll come back, all those issues will come back mm-hmm. to the commission yep. at some point, and we'll have a chance to talk about it again, and maybe you'll be back.
Yeah, hey, be happy
That'd
to.
Be
honored to be here.
All right, thanks so much, Ben, mm-hmm. and thanks, Jason, for
My
coming
pleasure.
Today.
Thanks for hosting.
And thank you for tuning in to this edition of City Current.
For more information on what was discussed in this episode of City Current, visit bismarcknd.gov. or call 701-355-1300. If you have suggestions, comments, or issues you would like addressed in future episodes, contact us at info@freetv.org. This program airs on Government Access, Channel 2 and 602 in HD, or on Radio Access 102.5 FM. It's also available as a podcast on radioaccess.org and as a video viewing link at freetv.org. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of City Current.